Bill Harwood, CBS. I think maybe for Jim, I just wanted to take another crack at Mark's earlier question. I mean, I think there's probably a bit of a contradictory message that comes out of an event like this when you officially say that they haven't fully implemented what many of us would consider the top three recommendations for return to flight. And yet at the same time, the message is, but they've done a great job and maybe as best they could reasonably do. But can you help me maybe just try to, what's the message that the public should take out of this, given these red lights and given what you're saying that they have in fact accomplished?
Well, unfortunately, you know, we were asked to make a determination that's binary, yes or no. The actual issue of trying to reduce debris and harden the vehicle and come up with repair options is not a binary problem. It doesn't lend itself to a binary solution. It's actually ranges of completion and uncertainty boundaries around numbers. So it turns out to be relativistic. They're relative to each other, and they're also probabilistic. And in other words, what's the likelihood that you're going to have some damage come off? Well, it's much lower than it was. And so while we can say that technically, or in our opinion, in the task group's opinion, they may not have fully met the intent of CABE, we're also saying that they have made significant progress toward reducing the likelihood that any of these things, these bad events, will happen. So what's left for NASA to do is to put these things all together in a risk reduction architecture and assess what they believe to be the residual risk before they fly. And I'm sure that's what they're going to do.
I think another way of looking at it, too, is what Dick mentioned. One of our charters, part of charter, is operational and safe of the vehicle when it flies. And we have assessed that from NASA's inputs to us, and we feel that it is a safe vehicle to fly based on their inputs, and they made that statement too. So that's where we're coming from. Now, the CABE recommendations has words in there that says thou shall do this and meet doing these kind of things, and we have not answered per the word of the CABE. But from an operational readiness to fly, the data they presented to us so far says it's safe to fly.
CABE wanted to break a chain of events that happened on Columbia. CABE, that's what CABE really, I think if you really get down to the heart of the intent of CABE, they were trying to break a chain of events. What happened is a piece of debris gets liberated. It has the right transport mechanism. It impacts the orbiter in the right place, causes damage that needs to be repaired, and there's no repair capability. And there's no ability to actually see and characterize the damage. All of those things added up to conspire against Columbia. And what CABE was really trying to tell us, I think, was that we've got to focus our effort in these four areas of reducing the debris, taking or making the orbiter more impact resistant, being able to see and characterize the damage, and then if you got some, fix it. They wanted to see all NASA's efforts focused in those four areas to reduce the likelihood that that event could ever happen, and I think they've done that. That's exactly what they went off and did. And the fact that in each one of these taken independently, we might find some semantics in their wording that says we don't think that they fully met the intent of this one. Overall, they've significantly reduced the risk.
And I might add, we may have made our job harder than it needed to be from the standpoint of in order to get people to sign up to do this, we intentionally focused on 15 return of flight CABE recommendations, and we said that we wouldn't question those CABE recommendations, just like the agency said they wouldn't question the CABE recommendations. As we know, things have changed over 2 years that might have affected the way that you looked at those recommendations if you hadn't said that. So, we're looking at each of the recommendations in a binary fashion to some degree. Although, as Jim says, we've looked, because they touch each other, we've looked at them together. But we may have made our job harder.
And consequently, and quite honestly, we were trying to stay away from being someone that gave a thumbs up or a thumbs down on whether it's okay to fly. We weren't going to do that. So we said, what can we do that's of value? And that's to look at the actions taken by the agency in response to those 15 recommendations that the administrator said we're going to go implement. And so we made our job harder by doing that and focusing in on a way we did rather than maybe a more holistic way of saying, okay, what did the CABE really want to do? Did they want to attack the chain of events by hitting it to different places and break that chain? And could we have done an assessment more holistically like that and come up with a different answer that said, that the intent of CABE had been met in a general nature? Well, that's not the way we did it, and that's not the way the CABE reported it. We had to go down and focus on those individual ones. And so, you know, our response and our assessments really have to be taken in the context of what they are. And that's why I refer back to the point of you have to look at what the agency's done, the progress they've made, and is it a miss if you're at 95%? I think Joe said it right, is that we haven't seen anything that says that the progress they've made is of concern relative to the safety of the vehicle.
Mike Cabbage with the Orlando Sentinel for Mr. Covey. Sort of a follow-up to Tracy's earlier question. You flew on the mission after the Challenger accident, returned to flight the first time around. And I was wondering if you could compare going into that mission the uncertainties and how well prepared you think the agency was to return to flight with this time around. And I'll repeat Tracy's question also just for the heck of it. Would you be willing, after having done this once before and based on your unique knowledge of this, would you be willing to go fly on 114 if you were assigned to that crew?
Okay, let's see. Relative to the preparation for STS-26 and that return to flight activity, the major difference is that in my mind, is the ability to actually test the changes that were made to address the specific cause of the accident. And in that case, you could fire a solid rocket booster with cut O-rings out in the desert. Can't take the external tank with the changes that have been made to eliminate debris and put it in a wind tunnel. We can't do that. So you have to go fly to do that verification of the changes that you've made in this case. It's not insignificant. It's a significant difference. At the same time, the tools that are available to do analysis and what has been done in terms of modeling, simulation, testing, is extraordinary from the knowledge that we have. And all of that has been put to good use by the program in doing their risk assessments and then trying to put it within a structure that Jim's talking about of is the risk acceptable. From the standpoint of would I be ready, based upon what I know, to go fly on STS-114 if I were a young flying person, I would not have a concern about flying.
John Kelly from Florida Today for Colonel Adamson and for Mr. Covey. You guys talked about carrying forward with ASAP. Could you talk a little bit more about that? What you're hoping maybe that they can do, maybe taking forward some of the things that you worked on and making sure that there's some continuity or perseverance, I guess, on some of these safety issues?
Well, let's see, I don't know if there's specifically safety issues, but if you take organizational change, the plan coming into return to flight was to have a plan in place. Of course, they progressed much further than that, and they've implemented most of the changes. But those organizational changes are some of the things that CABE saw as symptomatic of the way that the agency had changed between the return to flight effort after Challenger and the Columbia accident. And so that'll be one of the things we'll say is that, you know, the CABE or the ASAP needs to continue to monitor the way that the agency has implemented organizational change and to assess if it's effective as it was intended by CAPE. That's an example.
There are plans that are out there, such as a plan of how to put the foam on the manual areas. These plans must be followed up by the safety advisory panel to make sure that, hey, verily, they go in there and see how they're doing, going down to Michoud, checking it out. So there are plans that are required to be monitored down the road. And we're turning over those plans. They're part of our report. They will be part of their responsibility to take a look at them. And we also have some observations. Those two will be monitored. And we'll pass them on. And I believe the date is set for August 14th or something like that, that we're meeting.
August, I don't know what date.
Yeah.
And we probably should just say that we've been a little fast and loose with throwing things to the ASAP panel. We really don't get to tell them what to look at. You know, we do have an MOU where they take our recommendations and consider them. But NASA really kind of directs them, and so they're going to have to. I'm not even sure they're capable of doing all the things we talk about in their name, but. Really, we probably would be better to say that NASA should follow up on some of these things.
Okay, before we, yeah. John?
John Schwartz, The New York Times. I was wondering, from our vantage point, it seemed that y'all were possibly a little bit surprised that you went 0 for 3 today, ultimately. And I was wondering...
2 for 3, at least. They overruled me.
2.5 for 3. I'm asking for characterizations.
That's correct. 2.5 for 3.
And a little bit pregnant.
That's right.
I'm wondering whether you were surprised and whether, you know, and how you'd see this going forward. You've already said 2.5, you know.
I'm never surprised with this group. As we learn more this morning understanding the fact finding had taken place, there was a growing feeling in my mind that we might go 0-for-3 when we got into deliberations on these. And again, it's not 0-for-3 because it's partials in there too. It's if you want to take a binary look, which you're totally entitled to, but it's the wrong look. It's the wrong way to look at what we did today.
Okay, do we have other questions? Mark.
I'm Mark Carreau from the Houston Chronicle. Just a kind of a housekeeping question on the ICE and the LCC. I think I heard it called ICE and the ET umbilical, and there's also orbiter umbilical. Where is this ICE, and how closely do they need to look at it? What's going to be the trigger point when they have too much, as far as you're concerned, if you want to take a swing at that?
Well, it's on the ET umbilical to start with. It is on the base of the ET umbilical. The criteria that exactly what they're looking for and how much ice has not been brought forward to us at this point in time. And we're waiting to get that data, but it's on the ET side of the umbilical, and they have seen ice here before, and they are during countdown and the loading the last time, they didn't see any ice forming, but that was a good day. So that was not a criteria that they can use, but they're working on it to come up with what is the right requirement for how much ice is going to be seen in that area. And if they get more than that criteria, then they'll have to do something else. And they're going to do this by visual, taking a look with the binoculars and see. They have an ice team that will examine and see if they have significant ice. And if they have significant ice, they're not going to fly.
Okay, last one more here.
Bill Harwood, one more for Jim, if I could. I realize that it is what it is. And you guys were talking about timing earlier, Joe, as being a little bit of a perception issue here. But, I mean, I guess I'm wondering, if you delayed this launch, not you, but if NASA delayed this launch to the next window in September, is that by an incremental improvement in your mind in terms of completing these open items, et cetera? In other words, is there anything to be gained by slipping a window? In other words, is there some reason that that would not be a good thing or the opposite?
If I thought that it would significantly reduce the risk by slipping from this point, I would definitely say that. I don't believe it would, because a lot of this stuff is dependent upon flying to find out what you don't know. And we need to fly to learn how to modify the work that's been done and continue it. So my answer to that is no.
The slip from May to July was a good thing from the standpoint of the forward ET umbilical, not the umbilical, but the lock spellos, putting those heaters on was a real smart move. And I think that was justifiable. But looking downstream, I don't see, or NASA doesn't see any hardware changes at this point in time that's necessary. And that was another ruling that came out of the DVR meeting. Was there anything that would affect the hardware? And at that time, it was said none. Just analysis that got to be completed.
Okay, it's been a long day for everybody concerned. And so I think we'll go ahead and wrap this up. We'll have about a minute and a half of B-roll after we conclude, but I'll offer Dick any closing comments.
Sure. Well, it's been a long journey for NASA in from the Columbia accident to the point they are now getting ready for a flight readiness review. We have, I think they would characterize us in different ways. I don't think we have been particularly their buddies. I think we have been demanding on the space shuttle program in our quest to understand and to quantify the actions that they have taken relative to the CABE recommendations. I believe we have been a relatively harsh judge of those activities, as we discussed today. And as you saw, not all 26 people necessarily agree on whether the intent wasn't met today in that case. That there's some additional that we work toward a consensus and an acceptance of a group position, and that's what we got today. And I was pleased with that. Task group members have put a lot of time into this. I'm particularly appreciative to them, to our staff that has supported us diligently and done a lot of the legwork for us. And it's helping us finish up. So we appreciate the opportunity to be able to help NASA as it returns to flight. And as we deliver our advice to the administrator, we know he will put it in the right context. He will look at it in terms of what NASA has done to prepare itself to fly again and our interpretation of that. So thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for your patience. We'll call this a briefing.
Complete some of our assessments. That work has been ongoing over the weekend and was finalized this morning. I would remind you again that the charter of the Return to Flight Task Group is to deliver assessments to the NASA administrator on the 15 CABE return to flight recommendations relative to how the agency has done in their implementation of those recommendations. And in the past, at our public deliberations, we have completed our assessments of 12 of the return to flight recommendations, plus an assessment of space shuttle program raising the bar action number 3 hazard, which is elimination of critical debris. It goes on to the recommendations are the most demanding. With that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Joe Cozzopoli, who will take us through technical panel recommendations.
Thank you, Dick. And I think we all hope that this is our last meeting. And as you said, this is the tough ones coming together. They all play together. They all involve each other. There's about 50 charts we're going to take you through. It's going to be about an hour or so.